missed this race.
Look here.
I handicapped this race, and I missed this race. I did. And after, when I went back and looked at it, actually when I saw it in the manual, I was, oh my God, you got the Blind Prince's race. It became very, very clear to me why. I have the second and third horses, which were my selections in the race.
The tip-off is, if you look at Mama Cava, that horse tried in its last race. It only got beat ahead. They made a monster move in the stretch, right? Now let's go down to Mike Prince's.
But it lost the 6 furlong portion of that race by what?
Certainly, by 4 lengths on a 6 furlong. But here, look at Mike Prince's, just to get the mindset. Now, we're not talking about using rules, but when you go back, this is a distance horse. And look how he run the turf race on February 22nd. See the close? 5 lengths off, and he lost by 3/4. All right, now he run his route. He run another route, 1 1/8. Then now they're training. Now all of a sudden they run 2 early speed races in a row. They're training races. The horse is supposed to quit. The jockey let up on him. Look how he won the race. He come off the pace.
You now, say to yourself, that 2 races back was his last race of today's distance.
And then when you put it in the computer, it pops it out like it is the race. Now, the other obvious horse runs second, and that was Romeo's Mistress with the good early speed races. So that was a very easy race. Bert had it absolutely on the money. But that's the reason for the My Princess, the other mindset. You see, now we went at it from about 4 different directions, and Jimmy can talk about tandems and give you another way, the reason the horse was in there, too.
Yeah, I tried to stay very current with it. I wouldn't have gone back to February, you know, from July 4th, I wouldn't have gone back there. I do try and stay very recent. The interesting thing is, it might well be that if you did that, it would win anyway, but the 6 furlong part there, I saw that the horse was alive, and I liked that 6 furlong portion. That seemed to be the part that was significant, and it was recent. It was, you know, it had some recency. I do like to, what's the thing that Dick talks about, not waking the dead. I like to try and have the horse be very recent.
Those of you who are new, I just want to interject real quickly. We're lost totally by this. There is a procedure in your yellow manual, which some of you don't have yet, which will clear up what we're talking about. When a horse, the second call in a route is a 6 furlong portion of the race. 2 races back on My Princess, we draw a line after the 6 furlong portion of the race. Our procedure is then to knock 2/5 off that time of 1:12 and 1 or whatever it was, which makes it 1:12 and 1 makes it 1:11 and 4, which is an exceptionally fast pace. Well, it becomes 1:12 and 1. Whatever, you jump 2/5 there and knock 2/5 off the half, and then there's a procedure for getting an arbitrary first fraction. Then we cut the beaten lengths in half because of the new sprint and enter it as a 6 furlong race. That will be explained to you. I can see the puzzled look in some of your faces. It will be explained how you use that. It is one of the most powerful tools for getting long shots you will ever encounter. Nobody knows better than the man grabbing the mic.
I just wanted to break in. I don't want to contradict the guru here, but be careful on a big track like Belmont, because that's a 1 1/8 track, and I
mile and a half.
Whoa! A big track like Hollywood, which is 1 1/8, we don't do that. We take the internal fractions, but we don't cut them back. That's a question you answer for yourself by trying it both ways. By regression. But be careful with that. That's a procedure for mile tracks. So be aware of that when you have a monster track like Belmont in the area, that may not be a good idea. It's a good idea to use internal fractions, but it's not necessarily a good idea. I had no idea. Michael could probably
do it. No, 2/5 works just fine.
That's it. Belmont will
do it. Do it mentally. Do it mentally and see if the horse qualifies. If the horse qualifies, then we'll put it in your computer.
Don't you want to go to the higher classes
at Aqueduct and Belmont in those mile races, those six furlong times are blistering to the point where you really wouldn't want to take it. I mean,
it's not unusual.
Even reverse furlong internal times in a mile at Aqueduct and Belmont, you're on damn close to track record time for six furlongs. I mean,
that's because it's practically a drag race.
Yeah,
it's all stretch. That's what I'm talking about. Particularly one turn miles.
Reverse
it really notices. You might have to beeline. You have to know your track. And you have Belmont in the area, so you've got to know Belmont. I have Hollywood in my area. I have to know Hollywood. Yeah, one turn mile. Two years ago, for the Breeders' Cup.
But once again, for the benefit of those who have never done it anyway and have not reached the conclusions you have, they should first do it the prescribed way and then see where the alterations come.
Remember
which
when
you'll find by your practical.
When I talked about doing it 15 times, three or four of those times should be playing that way. Yes, sir.
I just want to make one comment about what we've been doing here, and which is all talking about regression, why you lost the race, or why this horse comes up. I learned to do it basically at the track, where it's done in a very primitive form. I noticed that I would lose the race, and all the other so-called good handicappers would lose the same race, and some bomb would come in and pay $60, and you would suddenly hear this rustling of racing form, and everybody is looking to see how this pig could win the race. And then they're all discussing it. The problem is that it's really primitive. They then go on and say, oh yeah, sure, see this horse is classy. Well, look what this horse did back here, then they don't pay any further attention to it. But what you have to learn to do, I think, is look a little deeper after you lose a race, because I found, at least in my own experience, that by losing, I learned how to win.
Absolutely. But you do that regression, and I take them home at night, never throw a form away until I'm done with it, and go over and over and over and over losing races. And it can be very, because you'll find yourself focusing on your, you may go out and win 6 of 8, and you come home and spend 3 hours on it until you lost. Well, that's no fun. But if you don't do that, if you're going to be in trouble late the next day.
Well, I no longer feel bad when I...
Remember that you won the 6. Don't feel that I'm a loser, I'm a loser. You did win the 6. That's great, but you want to learn from the 2.
If I could see that there's a way I could have gotten that horse, then the next time I may see that pattern again.
But the racetrack is not a good place to learn anything. I try never to work it to racetrack. I try
at all. This internal fraction thing is something that all of you should learn. Unlike Michael, I would have had this race. When I first got the yellow manual 4 years ago, the one thing in that manual that stuck in my craw was the internal fractions of a route. The first thing I look at in a sprint race, I see, do I have any routers in here? That's the absolute first thing I look at. It's such a profitable play. I mean, it's unbelievable on the West Coast. I don't know how it works in New York.
It's good here, too.
Well, obviously it works here.
It is very good here.
Look at also, there's another example of this in the back. The second race on Belmont, the horse called Combus, which was also taking off internal fractions. There's another variation of this, which we'll go into when we explain in very detailed manner how to get this, the alternate, and that is the stretch call procedure. That's another way of getting internal fractions without cutting the race down so much.
I just ran through this really fast, and if you took it off the February race, it would be the same result.
You would have won.
Yeah. It would have, the numbers were a little bit lower, but the order was the same. It still came out on top. They would have wallowed with them on top, too.
That's not a bad check of a pace line, by the way. If you're using a pace line that is the only line in the past performances that can make that horse win, take a second. There should be another. You may have to go back a year, but I'm not talking about using that line, but see if there's another line. If you're using the horse's all-time best effort, or at least its best effort in the last 10, you may be in trouble.
Look for a reaffirmation of what you got.
Yeah.
All right, well, fair enough. You know, like this, just the edge of the thing is, you know, like this, the way he ran Aqueduct, which is traditionally a speed favorite, and Inter, you know, like if they run early, they could usually win it. The way he ran that race, you know, like this, is he had a tough time doing it, you know, like getting that close. So my inclination would have been going towards that race, where that technically really worked itself, coming from home.
Well, don't talk about inclinations. See, I'm sure Bert didn't have an inclination of how that track was running.
Of course,
he knew how that track was running. Because
I don't know how Belmont would be running, but I'm just saying.
Well, no, no, because Belmont doesn't run the same way every day.
Yeah.
Believe me, it doesn't. No track in the world does. Even our Southern California tracks, where it never rains, change. And I'm sure that Bert knew exactly how that track was running. I mean, that's part of making this call, and it's part of the whole pace line selection. If you know that your track is running very sustained, you choose pace lines differently than if you know your track is running. When I'm playing at Santa Anita, I have seen weeks where I'm not talking first horse to the flag. I mean first horse to get his nose out of the gate wins. Three out of four races are wire to wire. And when Santa Anita goes early, it goes seriously early. And that influences your pace line selection, but just for that week. Next week, it rains, it goes sustained, and the pace line selection has to be modified with it. You're not looking for the best race. You're not looking for the most current race. You're not looking for any specific type of race. You're looking for the most predictive race based on the track that it's running over today. And you have to know what track, and not just the name of the track, but what that track is doing today. Because if you don't know that, you can't get the line. And there are horses that I'll look at Hollywood and put in, and 2 weeks later at Santa Anita, I'll throw out on the same form size track. Because it's a different track, slightly different. And you back here where you're playing 96 tracks and shipping horses all over the place, are really going to have to be very, very, very conscious of what each one of these tracks is doing. And when you try to pick pace lines the same way at Finger Lakes as you do at Saratoga, you are going to lose.
We have graphic examples of this in New York, and it happens a few times a year. one of the most pronounced differences in this approach is when they leave Belmont, they come on up to Saratoga. Now, for the past 4 years, Saratoga, at least on my records, has been a very early energy favoring track, especially in sprints, but also in routes. Belmont traditionally has been a sustained pace track where horses come who expend their energy late. So this is where you can get in trouble by having mechanical rules about finish positions. A horse that is on the lead and then quits a few times at Belmont may be a very, very dangerous horse at Saratoga.
Absolutely.
And you have to take that into account, and vice versa. A horse that's closing up here and can't quite make it in sprints, well, when we go down in the fall to Belmont, especially when those horses go on the turf for the first time, which is really late energy favoring, they will often win at a price. And conventional handicapper will look and say, how could this horse win because it finished so poorly or did so poorly? But we know because it will fit the differing energy requirements of the track. And Belmont to Saratoga to Belmont is a textbook example. Aqueduct to Belmont is another textbook example of a race track that usually favors early speed to a racetrack, early energy to a racetrack which favors late expenditure.
So if you're running the Phase 3 program and you're going to, say, split your class adjustment at Belmont, if they're running at Belmont, half and half, and then...
If I were to use a class adjustment at Belmont, I'd put it all on sustained pace.
Okay, all right. But,
because it's a sustained
pace
my records anyway.
All right. So then that horse goes to Saratoga and you would put it all on the early pace.
That's right.
Okay.
Because Saratoga traditionally favors early pace.
Right.
You'll know. And we'll get into that. That's my other subject I'm going to moderate. Is you'll know what your track is doing. You're not going to ever guess.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was early in the last 4 years did not mean it was early yesterday when we were there playing after the rainstorm. Because it wasn't. And it has not the what it did 4 years ago, if it was early every day for 4 years, does not have anything to do with yesterday. Because yesterday, the reality was it was not that early.
Okay, I have a question. I don't know whether this is the right time. You can put it for later on. There's a mention in the manual about the fact that the bias changes at the seaside tracks, Monmouth, and I guess the West Coast, the tide.
Oh, yeah.
Is that... Does anybody know anything
that
about that?
Certainly, but they're not reflected by your knowledge of the tide. They're reflected by your doing wind energy every day from the results.
That is
okay.
A question
regression
analysis asking us.
Okay.
Because no one here, except maybe Michael, plays Monmouth. We don't know. The same thing with Del Mar, supposedly.
Anybody's ever done
that. The answer is that's a question you ask your records.
Okay.
Because you have to answer. Because also, it's going to depend on your handicapping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep the right kind of records, which we are going to go into in great detail, we'll know. We just will never have to make you'll never have to make a selection.
Also,
the selection will be made for you.
I'm sorry, excuse me. Also, the important thing conceptually here, and this is a cornerstone of the methodology, is we don't care why. We don't care why the bias is changing. We care that it is changing, and we know when it is and what it is.
Well,
I don't care if it's tide, the moon, biorhythms of the horse. I don't really care what it is, but if you monitor it every day, you'll find that it goes.
But I just didn't know whether somebody did do that at one time and found that really is a factor.
Ginny Butler is
what
the
I'm
factor
asking.
But
has anybody ever found that to be true for Monmouth, is what I'm asking.
Every day in your track profile, I'll tell you, you don't care whether it's tide, though. You don't care if it's tide or wind or ever change.
Yeah.
It's there.
But somebody in the past did find that at Monmouth, the tides do have an effect on the...
I don't mean to be rude, but my response is, so what? If we have an energy profile which tells us day to day how the track is running, it doesn't matter what the cause of that is, and in fact, you may be ascribing causality where it doesn't belong. A track may go early because some yo-yo in the maintenance department scraped it severely and just had the tractors adjusted wrong or something. You may be ascribing that to a high tide or low tide. What I'm saying is you can get in trouble and waste a lot of mental energy trying to get why it is. Now, I'm sure someone probably did correlated high tide and low tide and all of that at seaside tracks. What we're saying is in the methodology, we don't care why. We don't care about any of the beliefs. Right? We just care what those numbers are and that we can monitor race to race and day to day what the bias is.
We have sand pile hand capping at Del Mar. We can look at the size of the sand pile, tell it's going to be early or late. They put their big sand pile in the back of it. It's low, so it's going to be late. It's high, it's going to be early.
On the other hand, you can do it from the front of the track, too, because I don't know where the sand pile is at Del Mar, and I do pretty well at it. I play
you don't
play
it up there?
No, I don't play the sand pile much, Mike. I leave that to you and I.
Nick, I played Monmouth in Vegas, and God, I don't even know where it is.
Last time I was in Las Vegas,
I don't know whether the tides affected the running of it or not. If I'd been worried about that, I wouldn't have caught some good payoff.
You can't let that work. I played Pimlico last time I was in Las Vegas. Dr. Sarton said, try Pimlico, it's easy. I literally did not know what state Pimlico was in. Honest to God, I looked it up. It's in Maryland, if anyone would like to know. But I still don't know where in Maryland. And I don't care. It doesn't, well, good for me. Now I know what, and I know what city, but I don't know where in Baltimore. And it doesn't really matter, because I did very well. I handicapped one, I looked at the early late bias, and I caught the next four. Bingo. And so it was that one race told me how it was running that day, that hour. If the first race was different, the fourth race it changes, you got to change with it. And you don't care if it was the tides or what. There are horses that don't do well in Hollywood, and some people say it's because it's under the airport landing path and there's airplanes going over. I don't know. I don't care. But it's just something you take into account when you're handicapping, and you let your records tell you that. Yes, sir.
I have a problem with that, because I don't think a one-race change signifies anything other than it was a one-race change.
Who said it did, George?
Well, he's saying if it changes in the fourth race, then he's going to change his play in the fifth on until he sees another change.
Absolutely. If you find that that does not work for you, don't do it.
It doesn't have to be a drastic change.
I'm not giving you rules. I'm telling you what I do. And that. And don't forget, I'm playing a whole different kind of track. Actually, I very rarely see... a change during the middle of the day on the Southern California track. If I did, And I have occasionally seen they go from early to sustained in an hour. Of course, there's 18 inches of rain during that hour, and it's pretty obvious. But I will make a switch like that if it happens.
Well, let's take a case where there is no rain and they've just been running over track and the sun's up.
All right. There is
a change in the bus that went to the front and ran away with it.
Okay. Sure.
You but that's, that. You just answered your own question. He ran away with it.
But are you then saying there's been a change to where
it has to be a rational reason, and it also has to be a track that you have to don't just sit down and start playing a completely strange track. Usually after a while you'll start to know, does Pimlico or whatever track you're playing, does Saratoga flip-flop during the day or does it not flip-flop? I know Hollywood Park does not. I know Santa Anita does not, but Santa Anita is completely different from Sunday to Wednesday. And by Thursday it's changed, and on Friday it's changed again. And I know those things by looking at a lot of records. There are a number of hours in that answer. Yes, sir?
Are you going to spend a little more time on picking out places, active examples of picking out places, case lines? And also, I'd like to have you at least say something about turf races as far as case line goes.
Do you want to take a sample race?
Find a race you like and let's go through it.
Preferably in the manual because everyone has it.
Definitely in the manual so everyone has it.
Yeah, so everyone has
the
it.
The only problem with the manual races are they're all picked. And I'll tell you right now, I used Michael's form yesterday in between giggling fits. it was very difficult to pick lines other than his lines because they were marked. And
they were the correct.
They were the correct.
Very difficult.
Yeah. He was hitting show horse after show horse. It was a phenomenal display. Man, get the expertise.
What page? 72. Anybody find a face line that you do think would be other than that?
Thank you. All right. And I've never even looked. I did not get a chance to read this yet. So this we're going to do this one together. And the place you start is not the first horse. The place you start is above the first horse in the condition box. If you don't know what you're picking for, you're in real trouble because you can't make a pick. So take a minute and read the whole box, even the dull, boring parts, okay? Because amazingly enough, there is information in all of it. And even if it doesn't influence you, it influences the people that influence the horses and the trainers. So you want to know what they are reading. And they spend hours poring over this exact little bit of information.
Look over on the next page over now, because that will give you some results from his earnings plot. Who are the top horses in the APV, the top four? You got to go into how he qualified his contenders.
I can't read that.
Is your race? It's 96%.
Huh? Is that 96? I can't read it.
96, I'm trying to
get it. 96, on the next bit. Vegas has the ideal place. APB.
So it makes it, just makes it the fourth.
He's in the top four. And one of the things you will have to know about Belmont in this case is where does it need to be in the APB rankings? Does it need to be in top four, top six, top 11, top two? And there's only one way to answer this question. You don't write Dr. Sarton. You don't ask someone up here. You find out for yourself. And you may find that you do APV slightly differently. I know people that do it a little differently. I give every horse a win, even if it doesn't have one. Not everyone does that.
You better do that.
I do it, but you may, you know, play with it. Try it. Well, most of your questions should not be answered by us, really. In the Washington seminar, Dr. Sarton asked me to speak as someone who was fairly new to it, who has dealt with a lot of the clients, and tell them, critique them. And one of the things that I said was a lot of them ask questions of supposed experts that they should be answering for themselves. And this is the kind of question that you should answer from your own record keeping. To find out where they need to be ranked at Belmont in APV, run 100 races at Belmont and check the APV.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what size sample for these regression?
As big as you got.
Yeah, keep it regular.
Yeah, keep it regular.
The first day you do it, they're in the top four. Then the second day, the top four. It expands or diminishes.
Take
you
a look
have to
at
start
it.
That journey with the first day's records.
And don't keep it for years and years and years.
It doesn't
just
matter.
Just keep it for, you know, a little time. As long as it feels good until it stops.
Like 20 races.
In the green shirt.
Virtually nowhere does it go beyond the top five.
Can I ask why, Michael, I guess, why you didn't include Elite Streets?
This is not, this is Bert's race.
This is Bert, and I think he ought to be the one actually to lead the analysis on pace lines, because it is his race.
And then we can go through one of my races next.
He had a 48 APV, 0.48, 48%. That just is too low at Belmont.
What is the
1.46 is my class rating, I think. I was using a couple of different programs at the time. One kicked out class ratings that I never used, but I wrote them down just in case if anything, you know, if it turned out in doing my post-mortem that for some reason the one at the top, one of those, was always the winner, well, I wanted to know about it. So
it's about 50%. I just read it.
Yeah, it's 0.48, and that's just not good enough.
Okay, now, the reason is 50%. This is one of the major difficulties I have with this whole thing. The reason this is 50% is because this horse has been running
Finger legs. Right, but also notice it's been running in stakes, state bred races, and I do something really radical with those. Now this is not a rule, but I cut them about in half in value. And if they earn, so you know, if they've got good fractions and prove that they've got pace class, you know, real true class in pace, fine, they can come back up. But if I see a horse in the APVs that has, say, everybody else is in the 90s, the 90%, and this one's like 110% of today's purse, and I look at everything it's ever been in as a state bred, and the times stink. It's never done well against anything like the second call of every other horse in the race. I'll just lop it in half and say, nah, it's really about a 60, you know, 60% of the APV. I'll take
that princess anybody would use. Is there any question about that line?
And but on your cheap tracks, remember, if you had a good horse, I'm talking a nice stakes class horse, would you send it to Finger Lakes? Or would you race it at Belmont? Just ask yourself that. There's a reason this horse was at Finger Lakes. Out on the West Coast, we have a problem with a track, Caliente. A $3,500 claimer there will run in 108s. Very hard, very fast. And yet it's cheap. And you have to know that the only horses that go down to Mexico are horses that can do nothing in Southern California. Because that $3,500 claiming may have a purse of $1,500. And you just don't run your horse. It costs a lot of money and it uses up your horse to run it. And if you can run it for $10,000 or $20,000 at Belmont or $3,000 at Finger Lakes, where are you going to do it if you have a good horse? The reason it was at a cheap track.
One time after, there was a maiden that they started with 5.5 furlong races, and Angel Pena had it, and they kept stretching it out. Finally, after one ninth race, maiden races years ago, they had it running 1.38 miles. And the horse just couldn't do it, and Jacinto Vasquez was walking back, you know, where they walk back and jog, he's with the trainer, and he told Mr. Penner that, he said in his way, he said, I think the horse needed a little more distance, like from here to Finger Lakes.
It's okay, my nurse
is
give you a little something on Finger Lakes. Tell about Finger Lakes and the APV.
Last weekend, on an off-track at Finger Lakes, without doing anything except APV. Top three horses in the trifecta between $3,600 to
$3,600.
All right.
Oh.
Doesn't do it every race, obviously, but if the race is open, you look at it
and
you say, yeah, right there.
The lower the class of track, the more important the APV. The higher the class of track, the more flexible.
Especially on the
gentleman in the dark.
Yeah, we're going to cover the pace splits and races for a mile and a mile and a 16th.
Pace?
You like the energy pace?
Yeah, we're
going to cover that in the variance.
We definitely are going to cover that.
On the fifth by Princess, why would you select the race that was 41 due for the pace line?
The same day.
Well, I'll tell you why I wouldn't. And then I'll let Bert tell you why he didn't. Something that I heard on those tapes that I mentioned was Bob Purdy say, I always use the last race unless there's a reason not to. Why go back if you don't have to? Why, in other words, if I see a race down six that's great, I have to find five excuses to get there. That's personal prejudice. Michael isn't quite as rigorous as I am. And maybe you'll find that for you, you don't have to be that rigorous. But I have to see a real excuse. And, you know, something like stumbled out of the gate is not an excuse, guys.
He's 0.96% of the first at a lower class, I'd use the last race. If you were 70% at first, I'd go back to the race you're talking about.
It's not his lifetime best race. I see no reason not to use that last race. To me, that last race is just an automatic call. If you wanted to go back and do something real creative, you go back to July 185, and there are people that do that.
One of them sits right over here.
But I just don't see any reason. Why would you pass up that first race? There's just no reason.
There is a reason.
Unless you want to go up to the class.
Well, no, the reason that would get you back to that race that you suggested was mechanically saying, I'm going to go back to the same class level that he is today and see what he does here. That will kill you. That's one of those mechanical rules that will absolutely destroy you. The key is looking at his APB, finding out that he is perfectly in his class, and then it doesn't matter if you take his pace line from a class level one level down.
The thing, we're talking about 2 5 clinches?
Yeah.
All right. This is a bottom line timer, Belmont, isn't it?
That's the next to bottom.
Well, 1550 is the second tier.
Well, all right, we're still dealing with the lower class, and the idea of it is, why would you want to dispute the last race? It represents form, condition, and it's in a checkmark situation. What excuse can you give me to go back to the race on the 28th? How can you excuse the July race?
It's a tandem race.
That's
why you go back.
Let me.
Both horses are.
We're going to get into the tandem in a few minutes.
Well, it's not that difficult a tandem because both horses are within a neck and a head of each other.
Yeah.
An eyelash separated. No, neither one's a winner. He had a second and a third, but my God, one was ahead. We're going to turn it over to Jim Bradshaw
on a tandem in just a minute.
Yeah, he'll
hold
that.
Off on that one. Just
yeah,
hold off on tandem.
What I'm talking about now, just looking at that pace line, there is no legitimate reason that you should discount that race. It represents the horse's current condition.
There's another reason to use it. I said, if you consider the pace matchup, you know it's probably going to be in a pace about like that, and it ran well against that base. And that
not any better.
Well, I'm going to go back to a slower base.
Yeah.
Let me insert something in this aspect here on this particular race. It's hard for me to talk about form cycle. It's hard for me to talk about a pace line selection without getting into the matchup and the tandem, because all of these things go hand in hand as far as I'm concerned. But in looking, it doesn't matter which race you use. You can use any race you want to on Turnpike Princess, and you can use any one you want to on Frisco Delight, and you can use any one that you want to, because there are only two horses in the race for win consideration.
Why?
Well,
our
Peggy Lou. Our Peggy Lou, here I say it, the main thing is in getting into a pace line selection, it's hard for me to say anything without going into the matchup. I can eliminate Medieval Melody, Vegas Delight, Elite Street, just automatically for win proposition because that they're going to fight for the lead. Now I'm looking for one that's going to close. I see two closers in Turnpike Princess, Frisco Delight out of the tandem, our Peggy Lucy out of the same tandem. I can eliminate her because she was out of the contention of the tandem concept. She shows nothing in the past. Lady Boom Boom, same thing. I would not have used Medieval Melody at all. Only way that that horse can win if she makes the early lead. She can't make it today because of Vegas Delight, also of Elite Street.
Why would you eliminate Lady Boom Boom?
Really? Oh, Lady Boom Boom? Lady Boom Boom runs approximately at the Belmont in the contention. The best that she can possibly run is if she runs around a 23. She likes to be too close to the lead. If you look down, you can see that the race is going to be run a little faster than that with Medieval Melody. She likes to run at a 23. Elite Street is the one that is going to force the pace, forcing Lady Boom Boom and the other two horses to run a little bit faster, which makes your second call become just a little bit more. You start looking for one, you know, it's not going to be at a 46.4. It's going to be about a 40, possibly a 46.3 is what you're looking at the pace of the race in this particular instance. And the one that is closest that can run to this particular pace is Turnpike Princess, Frisco Delight. Now, this gets into your into the pace matchup, which I will go into.
The pace matchup is our very next subject, and we can just sort of transition into that right now, unless there's any more questions, just on pure pace line, right back there.
Well, I would like to re-ask the question that I tried to ask a while ago. For the life of me, I can't see why somebody looking over these horses can just ignore Elite Street. Now, I understand what you just said, Jim, and I agree.
Elite Street was...
This is the analysis that you've done, but look at this. This horse is dropping almost 50% in category.
I don't care.
Yeah, but he didn't do anything on
it. I don't care what...
His last time out was 600 furlongs. He ran three calls of that in good contention. He's dropping back to 6 furlongs today, and he's dropping almost 50% in classes. And somebody just ignores it.
All right.
See how you do it.
You look at Elite Street. When she won, how did she win? On the lead. She goes wire to wire only. Can she go wire to wire today? No.
That's how you do it. The other way is the way that Bert did it. The way that Bert did it is APB. And don't ignore APB. If you start looking for exceptions...
How does Medieval Melody like to win? How does Medieval Melody like to win? Wire to wire. We got two horses in the race that can only win wire to wire. So this is going to set the race up to be run for a horse that can run close to and even with the pace.
Michael tells me that the Belmont 6 furlong energy pattern is about 51.8. Okay, I just did this race on the phase three computer to look at. These are the rankings. Turnpike Princess is number 2 on Factor W. 3rd on early pace, and 2 on sustained pace. I think Vegas was the place horse, I'm not sure. Number 1 on Factor W, 4 on early pace, and 1 on sustained pace. So that tells you that Turnpike Princess is going to be in front of Vegas at the second call. Has the perfect energy pattern, 51%. I mean, that's as close a fit as you're going to get. And Vegas is 50.62%, which is too late to win, but probably fits the place model. The other two horses are tied for early Medieval and Lady are the other two that I put in here. They're both ranked number one on early pace. My little program has beaten Lynx projected at the second call. I show Lady with the lead, and Medieval only 0.18 lengths off at the second call. Those two are just going to kill each other off. Turnpike Princess is laying back there 1 1/4 lengths behind these two speedboats and has the perfect energy pattern to win this race. Vegas is 3.5 lengths back off of those horses and is not going to get up in time to win this race. I mean, it just, this gives you a picture of,
Bob, did you
well,
put a
I understand it.
Did you put a Elite Street in?
A big one?
Did you put a Elite? I imagine if you put a Elite Street in, pick its most predictive line. In this case, I see no reason to go back past that first line. None whatsoever. Put that race in and see if it comes up. See if you can get that in the top two sustained. I'll bet you a dollar you can.
Well,
it was.
It was.
No, it isn't. No, it is not dropping in class. It is dropping in the class of the races it was running, but it is not dropping in class. It's going back to where it belongs. Or maybe it's not there yet. No, it's half of the APB. This horse is not there yet. Class, if you have a nag and you've got $1 million behind you, you can get this nag into the Kentucky Derby. At least you could a couple of years ago. You, if you're willing to pay the price, you can enter your $5,000 claiming horse in $50,000 races. That does not make it a $50,000 horse. You'll see this particularly in the bottom classes of tracks all over. The owner lives in New York, wants to go to Belmont, and wants to see his horse run. He tells the trainer, we keep it at this track. And Bert did, because he ran APB, and he knows that not one horse in Belmont has won on a 48 APB.
But I ran with Autoscan, which now the Autoscan plus variant was what I used to pick. Frisco was first with 86.11, Turnpike Princess 86.02, Medieval Melody 85.97, you can read these yourselves on page 74, and so on down. They're all, the lowest one's 85.36, I'm just adding this one, 84.29 is what Elite Street off that last race comes up with.
And there's no reason to go back beyond that last race.
If you left him in, he wouldn't play the same. Leave him in, he won't win anyway.
Yeah, leave him in. But you cannot make an adjustment for the horse because of class. You cannot play with the horse like that. That will, I mean, well, all right, you may do it, but it will cost you money. It truly will. This is a question you answer yourself. You try it 100 times. I imagine you can find 100 Elite Streets in 150 races.
If you have a horse who ran three good
calls
around
the
time out there, and it's dropped in
fast,
and it's cutting back in distance, and
you're
doing all that
for
that will cost you money.
All right,
don't
worry. You know, no, on the other hand, wait, just on the other hand, you're sitting here with two people who are 70 to 80% of New York tracks playing every day, doing this every day, day in, day out. I'll defer to Bert. This horses will not win. And back them if you want to. Do your regression if you want to. If you find they win, play them and God bless you. What we're suggesting is from our experience, they do not and they cannot. What you're talking about and what I hear from you, my listening of what you're saying is that all of the traditional handicapping concepts say that this horse should be in there because he's got a drop, he's got the early speed thing, he's got the da-da-da-da-da-da. And what we're saying is, that may be so, but from our criteria of parameters that we have from the reality of Belmont, the 48% APB doesn't work. Another thing, that Finger Lakes horses just don't run in Belmont. And that's again, another thing from doing every day, and wasting money. I've wasted a lot of money on horses like Elite Street before I just learned to just throw them out.
But also it's important that it's not truly dropping in class. You keep saying a horse dropping in class. This one is not. This horse is at half of today's class. The number there that says claiming 35,000 and the number up above that says 25,000 are the things that a lot of other people looked at, and I'm very happy they did because I won $20. You know, but the point is it's not dropping in class. You do find out that it's twice, it's in water, it's two times deeper than at the top of its nose. Okay, this horse is a Calcan special. It shouldn't be in there. This is one of those for that special part of the track at Finger Lakes where they back the semi up and the horse is finished going around the oval and they run right up into the back of the truck and off to the cannery.
Look at the prices that he ran for successfully.
It's at the 0.48 APA.
12,000 is the best. It's running for 16 today.
This is the end of the tape.